For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and also gracias to viewers in Mexico, who've made that country number 24 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction. And also gracias to polar ice, which seems to attract a lot of attention, including to our videos. And with good reason, because it's a favorite alarmist gotcha, like polar bears. And, like polar bears, it's one that seems unwilling to vanish on cue. We made that point last week, and this week we return to it because of how the alarmists are handling the failure of this prediction yet again. For instance, Stanford University, along with MSN and others, peddled a Manga Bay piece with the headline, "No New Record Low for Arctic Sea Ice Loss in 2025," end quote, as though this were something inexplicable and also ephemeral. What they could have said was that for 13 straight years, the dreaded ice loss wasn't happening. Instead, they say it still is, you just can't see it for all the ice. For starters, the piece calls the high level of ice in 2025, quote, a recovery, in some ways, from where things stood earlier this year, end quote. What? Earlier this year? Not, say, in 2012? No, this year. You see, quote, at the winter maximum in March 2025, the Arctic ice was in bad shape. Ice cover in the region then barely topped 14.3 million square kilometers, 5.5 million square miles, the smallest extent at the winter maximum observed in the 47-year satellite record, and more than a million square kilometers, 386,000 square miles, below the 1981 to 2010 average winter maximum, end quote. Actually, on March 22, 2025, though marginally below other years, it wasn't outside the pack. Partly because in March, pretty much the entire Arctic is frozen, from Kamchatka to Svalbard and Novaya Zemlya, every year. Still, quote, much of 2025 followed a similar downward-sloping path. Throughout June and into early August, Arctic sea ice cover was tracking close to, if not at, a record low for the time of year, end quote. Which it wasn't, but never mind. The point is, quote, the fact that Arctic sea ice extent has not once broken the minimum record set in summer 2012 can seem counterintuitive at first glance, especially when considering the hastening speed of climate change and record warm years over the last decade. But researchers say that failure to set a new record is to be expected, and in line with modeling evidence published in August in the journal Geophysical Research Letters, end quote. Yeah. Counterintuitive is one word for ice that's melting away, not melting away. And if researchers expected it, why didn't they say so beforehand? Because we're all going to die, since it's a natural cycle that, quote, can't last forever. When the slowdown does end, the anomalously high amounts of sea ice remaining could more rapidly melt away, end quote. Yeah, unless they don't. But if not, send more models and hold the ice. And now, we interrupt the program for a word from our sponsor, which as always, is you. We haven't asked for a while, I don't like doing it, you don't like hearing it, but these videos don't make themselves. You know, we don't have big fancy budgets. We film here in my study or downstairs in my living room, and the only reason we can do it at all is because of contributions from people like you. So please, if you haven't already, make a pledge, one time or monthly, so we can get back to doing what we love best, which is this. In the newsletter, we also return to our Hypocrite of the Week feature, and this year it's Carbon Carney, Canada's net-zero fanatic Prime Minister, who has flown across the Atlantic and to and fro above the Earth repeatedly since assuming office back in March. Almost his first act was to zoom off to France and Britain, and he's since been to Europe at least three times. He was also just in New York, with barely time to unpack from a jaunt to Mexico, and then he blasted off to the UK to say all the same cosmic gooblahoy to essentially all the same people. Things like, quote, a transformative opportunity to build a fairer and more resilient global financial system, end quote. So apparently it's absurd to expect him to stay home at his desk doing things like, balancing the budget, getting equipment for our military, stopping his ministers from acting like clowns, fixing our busted immigration system, or any of that boring rubbish. Or even getting us on track to meet our own pretentious greenhouse gas emissions targets, aspirations being for winners and results for losers, or something like that. Giants like him stride far above all that petty clutter, and you crawl under it. Then, from the We Are All Going to Die of the Week file, same old, quote, planetary health check reveals oceans have breached critical acidification boundary, end quote. So, how going to die are we? 7 of 9, apparently. Quote, the 2025 Planetary Health Check, published by the Planetary Boundaries Science Lab at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, PIK, warns that 7 of the 9 critical Earth system boundaries have now been breached, one more than last year, end quote. And yet, the hull of spaceship Earth, apparently resembling Swiss cheese, has had zero effect on our actual vitality. Ah, and as we predicted, the return of something called fall has put a stop to media hyperventilating about scorch and soar. But they found something new. From the Weather Network, via MSN, quote, heavy rain batters London, Ontario, end quote. So we say look for heavy downpours of the word batters until scorch comes back around about June. Ah, and in the newsletter, we also sneered at a New York Times columnist for, among other things, babbling that, quote, 10 years since the landmark Paris Agreement seemed to promise a whole new era for climate politics, the rich world has mostly abandoned warming as a matter of political concern, end quote. Which is a characteristically strange alarmist hallucination, since, of course, most governments in the Western world are obsessed with climate, even on the rare occasions when they try not to be. For instance, the Australian government's new National Climate Assessment, which is a predictable pastiche of alarmist clichés and vague empty promises, and big bad modelling scenarios. But if the press reports that politicians don't care about the climate or talk about it, why would you leave anything else they say on that topic? Including about communist China, for which the climate alarmist love notes just keep coming. And honestly, some feel uncomfortably like enabling an abuser. For instance, the Bloomberg Green headline, quote, China played it safe with first pledge to cut greenhouse emissions, end quote. One can hardly imagine such a spin if a Western nation had set modest goals. And then they assure us that their beloved is really an angel, despite appearances, with, quote, other nations have achieved larger declines after reaching peak climate pollution, and the world's biggest emitter has exceeded its own goals, end quote. So really, honestly, they love us and the planet. Still, as part of our commitment to fair play, we high-five Inside Climate News for proclaiming, quote, the steep environmental costs of China's massive global development, end quote. And then we again thumbs down Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, who again channeling the much-not-lamented Justin Trudeau, just told the Council on Foreign Relations, speaking of globalists who mistake windy platitudes for wisdom, that, quote, in my experience with China, they are, among other things, very sincere and engaged on climate. This is a country run by engineers. This is a country that understands a lot of the engineering solutions to issues around emissions, end quote. Except, as Juno News pointed out in reporting his remarks, though he didn't say it himself, quote, according to the International Energy Agency, China is the world's largest emitter of carbon dioxide, primarily due to the country's heavy reliance on coal combustion. In 2023, China accounted for nearly 31% of the world's carbon dioxide emissions, up 4.7% compared to 2022, end quote. Not that we're enablers or anything, you understand. Oh, and from the Whale Schmale file, it seems the Revolution Wind offshore monstrosity can go ahead in the latest round of the U.S. battling rulings game. Canary Media sneers, quote, the Trump administration is 0-for-2 in its efforts to halt under-construction offshore wind projects, and that streak may continue. A federal judge said the Interior Department stopped Revolution Wind without any factual findings, suggesting the federal government may have trouble convincing other judges to go along with its anti-wind crusade. Claire Feisler has the story, end quote. Or not, because she doesn't mention the critical issue of these massive pylons, cable trenches, and other such industrial devastation of fragile ecosystems harming the whales that once dependably brought a tear to liberal eyes. Once upon a time, liberals wanted to save the whales to the point of cliché. Now we'd say their attitude appears to be, quote, if you've seen one whale, you've seen them all, end quote. Except that this author appears not to have seen any, heard any, or spoken of any. And thanks to wind power, it may soon literally be true that the critically endangered North Atlantic right whale will be down to its last member, while offshore wind towers swarm from Maine to Florida. In the newsletter, we also continue our Have It Both Ways series with that gripping, though at least vaguely whale-related topic, saltiness of the North Atlantic. We regularly encounter these stories about how the AMOC, or Atlantic Multidecadal Overturning Circulation, is on the verge of shutting down due to global warming, which will throw the global climate into complete chaos, including plunging Europe into a deep freeze due to planetary heating. And when I say regularly, I mean almost weekly. And the idea here is that supposedly warming will melt glaciers on land and flood the North Atlantic with fresh water, diluting the salty kind and slowing down the natural sinking process that allegedly powers the mighty ocean circulation. So naturally, given that this form of doom looming, scientists are interested in measuring the saltiness of the North Atlantic. Back in 2005, they discovered, to their dismay and also delight, that the waters were getting less salty. And the culprit? Predictably, was glacial melting, increased precipitation, and continental runoff, which all the climate models say is the result of global warming. Boo, global warming. But 2 years later, a different group of scientists took another look at the data, and you'll never guess what they found. Yes, in 2007, they determined that the waters of the North Atlantic have been getting more salty. And what caused the increase? Why, global warming, of course. Boo, global warming. It was something to do with evaporation and precipitation. And of course, the subject being climate, it was just as bad as the opposite. Mind you, it should lay to rest this concern about the AMOC shutting down. Except that, in climate science, you can always have it both ways, so nothing is ever that straightforward. And another thing. Back in June, we were treated to lurid headlines in CNN announcing that climate change would cut world crop production dramatically, including by as much as 50% in the United States, where warming doesn't so far seem to have really cut into people's diets. Quote, "Rising global temperatures are set to devastate food crops across the world," end quote, they shrieked. Quote, "with particularly alarming impacts projected for the United States, where production of key crops could plummet 50% by the end of the century, according to a sweeping new analysis," end quote. Ooh, scaredy kids. But what's this? The tiny print in the bottom left corner says, quote, "note, data reflects estimates in a high emission scenario," end quote. And yes, reflects, filling us with confidence as to their attention to detail. So, could this scenario be our old enemy RCP 8.5? Oh yeah. And it gets worse. Not only did they use an emissions scenario long known to be exaggerated to the point of impossibility, they ignored the effect of increasing CO2 on plant growth by somehow inventing this future in which lots of CO2 causes warming without ever being in the atmosphere. Which is not science. It's propaganda. And they know it. Way down, buried in a 95-page supplement posted on the Nature website, and down on page 72, shades of Arthur Dent finding the plans to demolish his house, a diagram shows that for most crops, you get a lot of uncertainty and no meaningful decline, except possibly wheat. But one of the authors told CNN he hoped the SCARE study, quote, "will provide more evidence for the urgent need to transform the energy system and the high costs of failing to do so," end quote. Well, either that or reinforce our tendency to treat experts say as a cue to snort derisively. And finally, from the co2science.org archive, a tree locally known in its native Australia as Sydney Blue Gum, because it has green leaves, brown or grey bark, and rose-coloured timber. Nothing blue about it. And it's also not blue over CO2, because in 2010 and 2012, 8 experiments showed that an additional 300 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere caused its growth to rise on average by 42.3%, by gum. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I'm watching that ice. Always watching.
That's right.